Seems like many years ago, I always like to use my CarMax experiences because there's a lot of strange ones there. But if you were scheduled to work first thing in the morning, you had to be there at 9 o'clock. Come 9:30, you were taking a walk out into the lot. And for the next half hour before the store opened, you were moving cars all over the place. The sales managers would tell you which cars needed to be moved. They kind of grouped them into categories so that it made it easier shopping, I guess, for folks. If you weren't scheduled, they didn't seem to come after you to find you. If you were scheduled, they scoured the halls and the bathrooms and everything for you to get out there. Fortunately, we would have some folks who would come in early or decide to work throughout the day that would actually go out and help. And we had others who would say, that's not my job today. We see more and more of that in society today, that many are only going to do what is required of them. And in the famous words of Juan Hernandez of Homestead, Florida, that's not my job, man. It's not my job to do anything other than what I am required to do. Unfortunately, and I don't know why we get to the point where we're at in our society where so many want to do just what is necessary to get by. But nowhere in the Bible do we see anything in there that says just do what you need to do to get by. In the Beatitudes in Matthew 5, Jesus taught the lesson in verses 40 and 41. He said, if any man will sue you in the courts and takes away your coat, give him your cloak also. And whosoever compels you to go a mile, go with him 2 miles. The first clause in this verse, in these verses, that Jesus is teaching a very simple lesson here in retaliation. You know, the way of the land is today, somebody sues you, you countersue and see who can get the most out of what. But Jesus is teaching us here and his disciples that we are not to retaliate, that give more than what you have been commanded to give. He also tells us that if we are told to go 1 mile, we go 2. And tonight, it is these words that I would like for us to examine and to see just what they do mean to us and how we can put them into our daily regimen of Christian life. In the days of Christ and the Jews being under Roman rule, mail and other documents were delivered by courier. The horsemen were used and they were stationed on the public highways at the proper intervals. The United States, we got real fancy and we called them the Pony Express. But these couriers had the authority to press into service anyone's horse, or any other means of transportation to get the mail through. Most of the time, these couriers were handling very important documents going back and forth. It wasn't so much as letters from one family in another country to a family in another country. They were usually sent by private means or someone heading in that direction. But Jesus' remark here is based on the supposition that a man, when pressed into service, was compelled to go 1 mile. In today's modern society, traveling 1 mile doesn't seem that strenuous, does it? You know, as I go down the interstate and I always see the little dots on the side that mark a tenth of a mile, and I'm amazed at highway speeds, just how fast you can rattle off 10 of those and come to a mile. You can actually see on a flat surface a mile distance and someone within that mile. But to walk that mile takes time. especially if you were headed in the other direction. The Jews did not like this. It was distasteful to them. It threw in their face their subjugation to Rome. But Jesus, in his teaching here, tells us that it is better to travel the extra mile on one's own accord than to manifest the spirit of rebellion. So instead of showing the spirit of revenge, his followers should show the greatest degree of love, goodwill, and generosity. When we are at work, we are at our jobs, we go in with the expectation that we are going to do what we've been hired to do. Nothing more, nothing less. You pay me to do this, and this is what I'm going to do. Years ago, my very first paying job, other than pushing a lawnmower, was working in a sewing factory. And I enjoyed that for a certain part of the time. When it came to other aspects of what I was required to do, never once when I was a maintenance man did I ever think that included maintaining the bathrooms. I hated that job. I tried to pawn it off on my brother as much as I possibly could, but they had four bathrooms. So my boss said, we'll just divide them up. If we only do that which is demanded, we are not living in terms of our possibilities. What do I mean by this? Only by rising above that which is required of us, our service becomes richer and our character becomes more noble. By doing only what we need to do to get by, we are the status quo. As Christians, when we go above and beyond, we rise above the froth. We're at the top. Our character and our nobility becomes greater. When you decided to become a Christian, for some of us, it probably was a no-brainer. For others, it was a very hard struggle to leave behind that which we had known all of our lives up to that point. But when we become Christians, we pledge to give ourselves to the strenuous life of a willing service. That is our obligatory duty. But it's not until our willingness overflows our obligation that we really, truly become profitable servants of Christ. Now, we use different terms. We get out of our comfort zone. We grow and we do this, or we try that and we try that. And that's exactly what we have to do to rise above. We have a lot of examples of men and women in the Bible that were willing to go the second mile. In Ruth chapter 1, we read of Ruth, where Ruth left her home in Moab, where she was married to the sons of Naomi and her husband. And when the father and the sons, they all died, Naomi gave her daughters-in-law permission to go home. And there was a tearful departing of the other two, but they left. But because Ruth loved Naomi so much, she was willing to forsake everything and go with her. Did she realize at that time what kind of opposition she was going to face back in Naomi's homeland? I don't know if she did or not. Moabites were not well thought of by the Jews. But Ruth went above and beyond. In Genesis chapter 24, we have the account of Rebekah in verses 15 through 20, where we find here that she not only gave water to the servant of Abraham who was there trying to find a wife for his son, but she also watered his camels. She had no idea of the servant's prayer. And she certainly was not obligated to water the camels. But she went the extra mile. In Luke 21, verses 2 through 4. The one part of the Bible verse that always kind of gives a little twinge in my heart about the widow and the two mites. She was obligated with one, but she gave two. Then we also have Jesus' parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke chapter 10. Two men, those who you would think, because of their position, would have had compassion in their hearts, the priest and the Levite. And then you had the Good Samaritan, who he's now known to be, stopped. He bound up the man's wounds. He could have stopped there. He could have said, I've done all that I can, now it's up to him. But no, he went and he gave him a ride. He put him on his donkey. And he took him to an inn. And he, at that inn, he told the innkeeper, look, care for this man till I return, and whatever it has cost you to care for him, I will pay you back. A perfect stranger. A man who, in the reality of life at that time, has absolutely no relationship whatsoever with the Jews. He was willing to go the second mile. He wasn't obligated to go the first mile. What does it mean to go that second mile? As Christians, we are obligated, basically, to attend our services, to give of our means, to partake of the Lord's Supper, to sing with the spirit and the understanding, and to pray from the heart. That is our obligation. That is what we have been directly commanded to do throughout Scripture. Brethren, we must go the second mile. We must go beyond this. And that means that we must, of our own free will, voluntarily give ourselves in total service to Christ. While we have that obligation that I mentioned as Christians, we must also fulfill our voluntary duties as disciples of Christ. We must be constantly on the alert to willingly go the extra mile. You know, some of you may have talked to the family that visited with us this morning. They've been around the country, in primarily Ohio and Pennsylvania, and they were telling me the experience in the church that they attended in Pennsylvania. And when they had a shut-in, they were directed to go to meals.com and have a meal sent to the family that was shut in. And they told us they had a lady there that they hadn't seen in a while, and they found out, so they prepared a meal and they took it over to her. And she was very surprised. She said it was the first visit she's had in 6 weeks. You see, this was going the extra mile. Instead of getting online and typing in an address and having a meal sent, they, with their own hands, prepared a meal. Can you imagine the love that that individual felt, that somebody was willing to go to all that trouble for me? It's what makes Malden Church, and I'm sure we're not the only church, special. When we have shut-ins, the ladies get together and it's a flurry. Food comes from everywhere. And it's good. The real worth of a moral life lies in the attitude of abundant willingness to do more than what is required. So let the whole joy of a moral life is there too. If we are unwilling to go the extra mile, many of us would make that first mile a chore. If we're not willing to go the extra mile, the first mile is going to be a very hard road. When anyone is compelled to go the first mile, the only spirit which can save his soul from bitterness is the willingness to go too. Can you imagine that first mile, how hard it would be? Or being compelled to do that first mile, and you decide to continue on and go, the scenery changes. It goes from a hard road of ruts and rocks and washouts to a beautiful landscape. A landscape that shows that and proves that Christianity has power. Traveling with the one in which you are compelled to go the first mile, the second mile you develop a bond with those individuals. How many of us want to be average? Think about that for just a moment. How many of us just want to be average? Just to get up in the morning breathing, go and do what I have to do for 8 hours, come on home and be average in front of the TV set till it's time to go to bed. I dare say not a single one in this room. We cannot express the fullness of our personality by living an average life. Jesus once drew a clear distinction between the idea of just existing and that of living a full life in Matthew 19. In verse 17, he said, "But if you will enter into life, keep the commandments." Brethren, this is the first mile. Keeping the commandments. Keeping everything that God has told us is His requirements. Keeping those. In verse 21, he says, "But if you would be perfect, go sell that thou hast and give it to the poor." This is the second mile. I'm not saying that we are to sell everything that we have and give it to somebody else. I'm not saying that at all. Jesus was trying to make a point with this rich young ruler. And while he was keeping all of God's commandments, he was lacking in something else. Because while he was keeping God's commandments, he seemed to have forgotten everybody else except himself. It is our response to the challenge of the extra mile in which a Christian's character is molded. In the final analysis, the difference between the average man and the great heart is not a difference in a gift or a talent, but it is in the difference of character. Jesus was trying to get across that a higher life is attained by the 2 mile way instead of the 1 mile way. The best of us comes out of the past because we have a future of hope. And finally, let us relate cross-bearing to the second mile. Many of us, myself included, have thought of cross-bearing as being something that we are compelled to do. Some problem or tribulation that we've had to cope with as Christians. But brethren, this isn't cross-bearing. Cross-bearing is a voluntary thing. We bear our cross when we voluntarily make a sacrifice or suffer for the good of others. My cross-bearing isn't a trial that has been laid on my back that I have placed before me. That's not cross-bearing at all. Christ died for us. His bearing of that cross was for our benefit, and it was the greatest cross-bearing of all. He certainly could have gotten out of it if he so desired. But he chose to die for us. He bore his cross. Do we bear ours? Cross-bearing is very similar to that second mile. Both are voluntary. And both are essential to salvation. Even though, my friends, they're not obligatory. If you're not a Christian, I want to ask you a question. Are you willing to go the first mile tonight? Are you willing to take that step that will allow you to see and have that hope of heaven? Without taking those steps, heaven is out of reach. If tonight you decide that this is what you desire to do, to take and go that first mile, of repenting and confessing and being baptized for the remission of sins, we want to give you that opportunity tonight. A hope of heaven become a reality. It doesn't stop there. It doesn't stop there. Living the faithful Christian life is the longest and hardest part, and the second mile. But as a family of Christ, we all work together so that we can achieve the ultimate goal in our lives, eternal life. If that is your desire tonight, we want to give you that opportunity. If you are a Christian, if all you have been doing is the first mile, and you realize that you need to make a change and begin that starting of the second mile, putting things in its proper perspective, we want to give you the opportunity also of changing the things in your life that need to be changed to be able to go that second mile. If there's anyone that has a need this evening, we want to give you that opportunity now as together we stand and we sing.